Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot.
Well, hello, everybody. My name is Peter Werwein, and I am Managing Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. So it's a good time to check in with Doug Chayat. He is a longtime member of the Managed Healthcare Executive Editorial Advisory Board, maybe two decades worth of experience. He's kind of seen it all in this sector of the healthcare world we're in. Spent a fair amount of time at Independence Blue Cross, and now he's president of Value Evolutions. It's a consultancy that consults with payers of various sorts and third-party administrators on value-based care. So thanks for the time this morning.
Peter, good to see you.
Yeah. So let's start with a very general question, and then we can see what comes out of that and pursue it with a little bit of back and forth. You're a value-based care expert, and the term has been around, I don't know, a decade. A lot of us, people like me, became familiar with it with the ACA and the Medicare Shared Savings Program, ACOs, which are baked into the ACA law. It's right there in the statute. And CMS and CMMI have launched a plethora of different value-based care programs, all designed to reduce costs, improve outcomes. So I'm just, you know, at the proverbial 30,000 feet, I'm interested in sort of where you think things stand now. Are we tinkering still with sort of the versions that are out there? Do you see any sort of inflection point? Again, cliche alert, sort of a 2.0 going on. How do you see this whole field in terms of its development and the riff off the name of your consultancy? It's evolution.
It is an evolution, and you know it's been well. I've heard others refer to it as a journey. I don't actually like to call it that, and the reason is, there have been some really great examples of organizations who have had success in the value-based and population health management space, going back 10, 15 years. But you also have others who are just now sort of, dipping their toe in the water. We are sort of at an inflection point today. And I think in order to really evaluate what's going on, you have to look at what's driving it. And I think, honestly, there are two things that are making this even more relevant today than they have been, for a long time. The first piece is that a lot of the payers out there, a lot of the insurers are really truly putting their foot down these days, to say, hey, no new money to the provider community. And really what I mean by that is, historically, depending on who you are, hospitals, health systems, physician groups, more often than not, they've been able to enjoy inflationary adjustments to their reimbursement, ranging from, zero to even, 6-7%. But most of the health plans now are no longer comfortable with that. They may They may help out providers from time to time if they feel like they're being reimbursed inappropriately. But by and large, you know, the health plan's customers, largely self-employed, self-insured employers, are really insisting on, you know, keeping this trend flat. And so I think in a large part, that's what's driving it. And the other piece is just CMS. You know, CMMI, in my opinion, has become a legitimate enabler for those provider organizations who are serious about improving both financial outcomes and quality outcomes, as well as things like, you know, patient member satisfaction. So there was a time, you know, maybe 10 years ago, 5 years ago, even, when if you looked at the portfolio of options that you could potentially participate in through CMS, it was all over the place. You know, there was a pilot program, let's say, for hips and knees, and then that evolved. Obviously, cancer-based programs, you know, those have evolved. And then, you know, as you mentioned earlier, we had, you know, the early MSSPs and pioneer ACOs, and then, you know, it seemed like every other year or so, there was a new model or there was a new rule. And, you know, what's always been interesting to me about what CMS is doing is that they basically say, okay, here's the program, and you can either participate or not. And we have a chance, you know, we have an opportunity to actually approve or reject your application. But it's basically a non-negotiable program, whereas if you're a provider and you're working with a large insurer, things tend to be negotiable because, you know, there are a lot of variables that come into play. You know, are we going to include this product or that product? Is it going to be specific to MA? Are we going to throw in on the commercial business? Are we including our self-funded customers? Can the self-funded customers say yes or no as to whether or not they want to participate in the value-based programs, you know, so forth and so on? Sometimes the value, you know, the monetary value of these commercial programs can change depending on what a provider is willing to accept or not accept, you know, with respect to their fee-for-service reimbursement. So again, a very different model from CMS, who basically says, okay, here's the program for this year. And I think what's happened probably over the last 3 years is that CMS has really kind of turned on a dime. So it used to be they were, you know, throwing everything against the wall to see what would stick. Now they have really, I think, made a concerted effort to narrow those lanes. And I think, you know, they're finally at this inflection point, as I said before, where if you're a provider who's going to be sitting on the sidelines and really is just dipping their toe with CMS because they want to see what might happen, or, you know, try it out for a year or try it out for 2 years, CMS is no longer really, in my opinion, catering to those sorts of provider organizations. So they're really trying to develop programs for those who have said, you know, hey, we've had 5-10 years to learn this, and now we're all in. You know, so I think that's been probably the biggest change that I've observed, you know, over the past couple of years.
The visit for people like me, the most visible part of the value-based trend is the CMS programs and the CMMI programs. But you referenced that, you know, commercial payers and, you know, self-funded plans are also using these models. And that, just by the very nature, because they are private arrangements, I think it's a less visible part of the trend.
Right.
But if you, and you have probably more visibility into that than somebody like me, so are the models that the commercial payers using, are they just sort of picking up what CMMI and CMS have put out there and adapting it? Would it have the same look and feel, shared savings, quality metrics, you know, some reconciliation at the end, financial benchmarks. You know, the ingredients, you know, the basic ingredients in the value-based care pie. I'm just wondering if, is it, does it look the same on the commercials, you know, the private side?
Yeah, you know, I actually think the designs are directionally similar, but when you get into the weeds, there are a lot of differences. You know, so CMS, for example, most of their programs look at CMS trends, and they look at trends for particular regions, and they will establish targets based on those numbers. And, you know, it makes sense for them to do it that way, because really what they're trying to do is yield savings. So, you know, on the commercial side, it really is all over the place. You know, there are some models that do follow that same path, but there are a lot of other models that actually look at establishing baselines that are specific to a provider's own historical performance. And I actually like those models. I think there's a lot of merit in that. And the reason I like it, and it's not for everyone and it's not for every market, but if you're a provider, I think what's sort of uniquely fair about those designs is that you're really truly getting rewarded for your own improvement, right? So if you have a quality baseline that looks at these four or five metrics, or if you have a financial baseline that's based on sort of a cumulative, you know, experience over the past, say, 2 or 3 years, you know what the starting point is, and you know that you're trying to beat that. Whereas, you know, the targets that are being used in some of the other programs, the ones where you have targets being set for a region or even national, you tend to sort of chase your tail a little bit from time to time, because you don't have control over what everybody else is doing. You only really have control over what you're doing. And there could be a situation where you actually have a banner year as a provider, and you improve quality by 15%, you improve cost by 7%, but you don't actually get any bonus money because the target moved, because everybody else did better as well. So I'm not suggesting that one is better than the other. I think it really depends on the insurance product. Yeah, I think it also depends on the marketplace and you know what that region looks like. But I think, you know, that is one big difference between, you know, what you might see on the commercial side, you know, versus what you would typically see coming out of CMMI.
And on the commercial side, when you talk about providers, are these arrangements between the payer and the provider, are these happening at the health system level? So we mentioned that you worked in Philadelphia, so, and you worked for Independence Blue Cross. So hypothetically, is in or maybe you've talked to Independence Blue Cross. Is Independence Blue Cross coming up with a value-based contract for the whole Penn system? Or Jefferson, or is it or are these arrangements, these contracts, do they happen sort of at a smaller level at the individual practice level? Just wondering what.
Yeah. You know. Well, you know, I obviously can't speak for Independence Blue Cross, but I think just to respond to your question in more of a broad way, there is really a variety. There are really a variety of programs out there that hit all of those that you just mentioned. You know, so if you were to examine, you know, what some of the larger commercial payers are doing, you know, whether it's a Blue, whether it's a United or an Aetna, you will definitely find some programs that are targeting, let's say, primary care practices directly. You may find other programs that are targeting specialty practices, You'll find some programs that are really geared towards multi-specialty groups. You'll see other programs like more of a traditional ACO model that tend to look at the entire continuum of care, and they want to pull in the hospitals, and they want to pull in the skilled nursing facilities and home health and even, you know, behavioral health and you know, soup to nuts. And I think, you know, that's actually a great approach, because one size does not fit all when it comes to, you know, value-based design. The other thing, too, that I'll just mention is that you tend to see a slightly different approach coming from the national payers than what you tend to see from the regional providers. And I think part of that just goes with the notion that when you have, you know, big national carriers, you know, I'm sure they don't have the resources to go around and develop, you know, a different model in North Carolina from what they've, you know, deployed in Minnesota. So it's not surprising to see that they try to standardize things a bit more. But I think that's actually one of the reasons that regional insurers like the Blues actually have a bit of a leg up when it comes to designing these programs, because, you know, if you're a regional player in Florida or even in the Southeast, let's say, those market dynamics and historical trends and, you know, prevailing reimbursement and overall maturity, market maturity, when it comes to value-based performance, is going to be markedly different than what you're going to find in Arkansas, right? So I think, you know, having that flexibility is important. And I'm not trying to stereotype. I mean, it could very well be that say Cigna, you know, could have different models in different parts of the country. You know, I'm not personally privy to everybody's design and everybody's model, but you do tend to see a little more market specific design, you know, thrown into those regional plans, because they are really, you know, largely focused on their communities and typically, you know, one or two states. So,
yeah, it kind of makes sense that having, you know, because healthcare markets are really quite distinctive, I suppose they can be grouped in general, but, you know, mm-hmm. The way the Philadelphia or New York City market works is very different than the way Chicago or Minneapolis. But so changing the subject a bit, as you know, some major players in this value-based world have recently left the episodic or bundled payment area of value-based care. And, you know, again, for somebody like me, there was sort of an intuitive appeal to the idea that you would bundle the care for a hip replacement and you'd set a benchmark and it you could sort of get your head around it. But this seemed to send a signal that maybe bundled payments, episodic payments are not working out in this realm of value-based care. I'm just wondering how you see things with in terms of episodic payments now, given we've seen this a signal that maybe it's hard to make it work.
Yeah, you know, I think all of these programs have a lifespan, and you know, you are going to get to a point of diminishing returns. You know, and I agree with you, Peter. The concept around bundles or episodes of care makes sense. And, you know, that this has been a popular model for, you know, probably a decade now. And I think, you know, the thing that makes it work or has the thing that has made it work is that it gave an incentive to whoever the conveners were to not just look at their piece. You know, but, you know, if it's a hospital and a doctor, you know, look at the facility piece, look at the professional piece, you know, look at those quality indicators that can help you determine whether or not it was successful, you know, things like readmission rates, complication rates, that type of thing. And let's improve on it. And let's do it because we need to work together, because now we're going to get paid in this sort of global fashion. And our success really relies on us being able to figure this out. Now, having said that, you know, part of the challenge here is that you can only go so far. I mean, if you look at a hip replacement, you know, it could be that maybe the starting point was $15,000 and you got it down to $10,000 or $6,000, but you're obviously never going to get that down to $1,000, right? So I think what's happened is that in some markets and with some providers, they've kind of gotten everything out of it that they could. And CMS has not really structured the program, you know, BPCI or BPCI Advanced. It's not really structured in the way that if you continue to be a high performer, you still get bonus money. You still have to kind of bridge that gap, right, between you know, what you were doing and what you hope to do tomorrow. And, you know, from a pure monetary standpoint, it has to be worthwhile, because there is a cost of administering and managing these kinds of relationships. So I think that's probably what you're seeing as, you know, some organizations begin to exit the bundles. You know, the other thing that you're seeing is organizations who are not completely exiting, but if you're a health system, let's say, and you've invested time and resources in the whole bundled concept, maybe what you're doing now is focusing on five new episodes, different disease states, you know, different types of procedures than what you were focusing on before, because those could be a little more lucrative, let's say, or you know, there's still a lot more opportunity there. So you also see that as sort of an interim step. And it makes sense. But, you know, honestly, you see the same thing even with global capitation. You know, if you look at Atlanta, or if you look at Houston, or if you look at St. Louis, there are some high performing provider groups in those markets who have had a really successful run, and they've been able to bring down total cost of care and increase quality significantly. But then again, you know, there are markets, let's say on the West Coast, where that low-hanging fruit was gobbled up 15 years ago. And so they have diminishing returns also, and have had, you know, diminishing returns for some time, you know, Southern California in particular. And so it's something that's going to happen with really any model that you roll out.
So this brings us to an interesting point. So sort of in broad strokes, you know, you squeeze out costs, you sort of get the quality there, you know. If you're a winner, if you're successful in these value-based programs, be it episodic or a more capitated model, it seems like there's sort of an end of the road problem. And I don't know what that means in terms of the future of this trend. You know, are there provider organizations or types of care that sort of are at end of that road, and now it's just a question of pulling the organizations or the types of care that where there's still some gains to be made? But are we going to be in a situation where there's sort of just a whole area of medicine where, in terms of value-based care, that we've experienced the value gain and there's nothing more to be had?
Well, I think that is a really good question, because a couple of years ago, I probably would have tended to agree with you. You know, is the road going to run out? But that really isn't the case today, because two things in particular have emerged which have really been game changers, which leads me to believe that we're nowhere close to the end of the road. One of those things is the emergence of what I will call niche solutions in the value-based realm. And there's been, as you know, just a tremendous amount of private equity interest in healthcare. And that's just such a hot topic and has been such a hot topic over the past, you know, 2 or 3 years. 3 years ago, the hot topic wasn't necessarily PE, it was disruptors in general, because you had Amazon and you had Haven and you had, all of these companies who were, Walmart, I would put Walmart into that bucket. All these companies who were traditionally not focused on healthcare, at least not specifically focused on healthcare, who were investing a lot of money in this sector. Now they're still doing that. Amazon is a great company to follow with respect to healthcare. They're apparently one of the potential suitors for Signify Health, along with other big players like Aetna, CVS, and Optum. And Signify is obviously a big company in the value-based arena. But where I was going with this is that you also now see solutions, really advanced solutions for pieces of the healthcare continuum that you didn't see before. Broad-based, scalable solutions. I've seen this in orthopedics, for example. There are some really interesting models out there that are designed to significantly improve not only the quality piece, but also just overall total cost of care. I've seen some really interesting models in the cancer care space. I think we're going to continue to see a lot of interesting work in the whole cardiovascular arena, because that's another high ticket item. And I can go on and on. So it used to be you would see an occasional solution if you were insurer, somebody would come and present to you. But now you're seeing PE backed organizations who are looking to partner with everybody and anyone who has legitimate interest in what they're doing. So I think that's one big difference. The other big difference, and this is really what I thought of when you commented about potentially running out of road. There are some high performing physician-led organizations in particular who had pretty much maximized what they could do in their primary markets. Now what's happening is that those organizations are being approached by PE and other significant funding sources to say, look, I want you to take your model and I want you to do what you did in Florida in Michigan, or I'd like you to do whatever you did in Texas, bring it to Albuquerque. And we're gonna fund this. And I can think right at the top of my head of two companies, two organizations. Now, these are physician-led IPAs that have secured in excess of $500 million each to fuel their growth. So yeah, they may have gotten to the point or almost gotten to the point of diminishing returns in whatever market they began, but now you have some pretty deep pockets helping them push that into other markets that are largely untapped. So I think it's actually a very exciting time to see, where this goes. The only sort of caveat I'll throw out there as an observer is that, you have to be careful with really all of these companies, because on the one hand, it makes it interesting to watch because healthcare has been, pretty conservative, as an industry. And there have been those who have really done all they could to sort of protect the status quo. But when you look at venture-backed funds, clearly, they're getting into this because somebody has suggested to them that there's money to be made in healthcare. And there's nothing wrong with that. clearly, you know, that's what kind of keeps this system going in some respects. But you also have to ask yourself, what's the long game here? Because if you see these PE-backed solutions, you know, get a foothold, you know, 3 years, 5 years from now, are they still going to be here? Or are they going to follow their game plan and sell to somebody else? And if whoever buys those companies now has those solutions, are they going to use them for good, or are they going to just sit on them? So, you know, that's a big question.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.